right now, it's time for Oh, the Humanities, taking a look at humanities scholarship, research, and events on campus and around the community, courtesy of Carolina Public Humanities, which you can find more about at humanities.unc.edu. Joined in the studio today by three special guests. We're going to let one of them introduce the other two. So I will welcome Rachel Shavitz to the studio. How are you?
Oh my gosh, it's been a minute.
Yeah. Welcome back, by the way.
Thank you.
You were on the best trip of all time.
Seriously. Promoting Dr. Andy Reynolds' new book, The Children of Harvey Milk, How LGBTQ Politicians Changed the World. And I got to go to New Zealand and Australia and parliaments all over the world. It's been really a special year.
And we had him on the air.
Well, we promoted it. Flyleaf Books here in Chapel Hill was the international premiere, followed shortly thereafter by, you know, Westminster and the Beehive and every other parliament you can think of.
Awesome.
It's been awesome.
Awesome. Yeah. So you are back.
We
and
are.
Already ramping up for another really cool event that's going to be this Saturday, right?
That's right. So this one is taking us, it's way back. Way back.
Way back, yeah.
Pillars of Antiquity.
Days and days.
Seriously. Space and time in Egypt, Greece, and Rome. So all you nerds out there who love the ancient world, this is the one for you.
Nice. And this is about space and time.
Precisely.
In the ancient world. And this just in and of itself is a really cool concept for a discussion, because I think we don't think about our concepts of space and time very much, but other cultures now and in the past have very different concepts of it, and it completely changes how we look at the world.
Exactly. So I better introduce my specialists, because then they can speak to exactly what you just said.
Yeah.
So first up, I've got Dr. Jennifer Gates Foster. She is from UNC's Department of Archaeology.
Welcome.
Classics. Yes.
That's right. Yeah. Classics. And then we have Dr. Fred Naden. He is in UNC History and the Peace, War, and Defense Program.
Welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So,
exciting.
So Jennifer Gates Foster, let me start with you. Your talk is going to be called Ordering the Cosmos, Egyptian Views of Foreigners and Foreign Lands. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so this is a kind of a cool way into this topic of space and time, because for the Egyptians, they had in some ways a timeless view of their own space. And so sort of thinking about that and exploring that is a really kind of fun thing to do, and thinking about the big picture for Egyptian history. Egyptians thought of the world as ordered fundamentally in these really cool ways, and they really saw themselves in opposition to a landscape of water and desert, and really saw this paradigm of duality. So thinking about time and space was really ordered around the Nile and its cycles, and they thought of the world as really reflecting that. So places that were ordered and understandable and civilized were resident in this cool landscape of green, lush growing things, and forces of chaos lay outside that world in the desert. So it was a way of understanding people and things and places that was inherently dual, and it just really ordered their thinking in lots and lots of ways over time, really throughout all of the periods of the Pharaonic period and really into the early parts of this millennium. So
what are some of the ways that we see that duality?
Yeah, so in their concept of kingship in particular, because, you know, the pharaoh was a big deal, and his whole job, really, his portfolio can kind of be summed up in one way, which is keep chaos from happening, right? Hmm. So his presence, his acts, his way of being, his sort of connections to the world and to the gods kept chaos at bay. So if the king was not doing his job, he wasn't making offerings to the gods, he wasn't honoring the system that he was part of, then, you know, it was the end of the world. So it was a big deal, right? So this was in their mind, you know, kingship, this hierarchy, kept the world from ending, essentially.
Wow.
So there was a lot at stake. So this whole system was very conservative, very much sort of tied to this idea of replicating ways of living that would support and kind of contain that inherent tension between chaos and order.
And then the talk is Egyptian Views of Foreigners and Foreign Lands. So this enters into that.
It does, because for Egyptians, the kind of quintessential thing other than the desert, which personified this idea of chaos and the potential of the sort of the end of order, were people who came from those places. So the Egyptians invested over time in the New Kingdom and into the first millennium, invested a lot of energy into articulating ways that people who lay at the boundaries of their ordered world, their kingdom, their state, personified a lot of these anxieties and these cosmological
concepts. This is starting to sound real familiar.
Yeah, though, you know, borders, borderlands, othering the other, you know, these are concepts that we haven't invented, and we're in many ways can see some of these same ways of managing anxiety, managing fear, and sort of laying those onto populations. That's something that the Egyptians did for a long, long time, about 3,500 years. So the talk will really explore some of the way that worked out in terms of the visual depictions of these peoples. So looking at Egyptian depictions of Libyans, who were their western desert enemies, the Nubians, who were their southern scary people, and then some other sort of more ambiguous groups, sort of Arabians and people who are coming from the Aegean. So we're looking at how that all kind of played out in real time, in the New Kingdom in particular, and then in the first millennium. And we'll be looking at the New Kingdom version of imperial depictions of subject peoples, and then flipping it on its head in the first millennium, we'll look at a time when Egypt is actually dominated by foreigners, and we'll try to see how do they reconcile that view of the cosmos with a time when they themselves are subject to foreign peoples.
Awesome. Yeah. Speaking with Dr. Jennifer Gates Foster, that is talk number one. Let's turn to Dr. Fred Naden for talk number two, which has the best title ever.
That's what I said. That's exactly what I said.
What will happen next? Ask a goat. Now I need to know everything.
If a Greek, like some other ancient peoples, wanted to know the future, what the Greek would typically do is use an animal to learn whether he could or she could communicate with the gods. Without the animal, the Greek didn't have the confidence to talk to the gods. Animals led people to God.
Mm-hmm.
The favorite Greek animal for finding out about the future was a goat. What a Greek would do is kill a goat.
Okay.
Kill the goat the right way, God will talk to you. If the goat dies the wrong way, God will not talk to you.
What did it mean for God to talk to you?
Well, let's take the most famous case.
Mm.
There was an oracle at Delphi,
mm-hmm.
and the god that spoke there was Apollo. He'd inherited this plum job from earlier gods. If you wanted to find out what Apollo thought, you couldn't just walk up to him and ask. I mean, this is like trying to break through the Donald's security and finding out the kind of thing that only Ivana and Ivanka get to ask him.
So a 50-year-old can't do it, but a 14-year-old can?
What you need is to kill your goat.
Okay.
And then at Delphi, you are brought in to the shrine, and you ask your question, should I get married? Should I leave this city and go emigrate? Should my city-state make war on another city-state? Mm-hmm. All matters large and small. You ask, and the question then is turned over to a priestess, the famous Pythia, who sits over a chasm in the earth, out of which a gas, rather like laughing gas, is occasionally emitted, something that, by the way, was claimed by Plutarch, the best-known ancient writer to deal very elaborately with this subject, and skeptical moderns never believed it until a chemistry professor from the University of Kentucky took the story straight, brought his equipment to Delphi, found the little cleft, measured the gas, and yes, the Delphic oracle got high.
Oh, nice.
But you can't get to her. You can't get the wisdom that comes from the laughing gas
mm-hmm.
unless your goat has died right. Mm-hmm. No goat, no girl, no,
no
gas.
Wisdom.
No wisdom.
No wisdom.
Yeah, no wisdom without the goat first.
Right. And so you don't know whether to get married, make a war, leave town. You don't.
Does that tell you something if you go and you don't get an answer? What does that suggest to you? Is that,
well, if the goat doesn't die right,
mm-hmm.
you get out of Delphi quick.
Okay.
Because the goat knows something about you. The likely thing is that you've committed murder or some other sacrilege.
Okay.
And God doesn't want to talk to you.
How interesting.
And the goat knows it. The goat finds it out as you kill the goat. The goat learns who you are. as you kill it.
So the goat knows the future, but will only tell you based on his knowledge of the past.
Right. The goat is privy to God's knowledge.
Interesting.
Somehow. And it isn't just at Delphi. There's a second example that shows you how important this was. Before a battle, the most important Greek armies, the Athenian and Spartan armies, and probably the others too, would face off. You'll remember Greek warfare from many a Hollywood movie. They can face off at a distance of a few hundred yards and not harm one another. They stand there in the heat and they stare at each other. But that isn't all they do. The Hollywood movies always leave out the goat. The king or general walks out in front of his soldiers some way so that they can see him. He drags out a goat and he kills the goat on the spot, out in front of the troops. And the goat has to die right. And if the goat dies right, the battle takes place. Mm-hmm. And if the goat dies wrong, the army does not give battle.
Interesting.
There's a famous example of this. It's related by Herodotus. This is involving not the best known Greek battle, but was perhaps the most important. This was a battle with the Persians, not the famous one at Thermopylae or the other at Marathon, but an actually bigger one. The climax, the most important of this set of battles, at a place called Plataea. The Spartan king was being attacked by the Persians. They were much better archers, and they were standing off in the distance and killing Spartans. There were the Spartans, nobly arranged in their files and rows, and dropping like so many flies as the Persian arrows came raining down. Now, the Spartans had excellent discipline, and they stood there and they took it. And why didn't they do anything? Why didn't they attack or run away or maneuver? The king couldn't get the goat to die right.
Mm.
And then, in desperation, in despair, in panic, the king didn't know what to do. And he looked off into the distance, and he happened to see a very distant shrine, and there was some kind of light there. And that convinced him that the goat must have died right after all, because a goddess off in the shrine was now willing to say to him, "Fight." And the Spartans finally started fighting, ran downhill, that was convenient, and routed the Persians.
Wow.
Thank you, goat.
Speaking with Dr. Fred Naden, Dr. Jennifer Gates Foster, both of them are going to be speaking Saturday at an all-day event. And again, you get more information on this at humanities.unc.edu. It's called Pillars of Antiquity, Space and Time in Egypt, Greece, and Rome. So we've covered Egypt and Greece. Our third speaker is Dr. Richard Talbert, who's going to be talking about Rome. And Rachel Shavitz also here.
Yeah.
Got to talk about Rome.
Oh, I know. It's just so funny listening to the discussion that Dr. Naden was saying. It just made me think of our upcoming podcast and how we're going to have to talk about the 300, because all
we
of what
don't
he just...
have to talk about 300.
Oh my god,
we were
sitting
in that movie theater just like jaws hanging open, like this is terrible.
This is a comic book on screen. I agree. Our third speaker, it's a controversial opinion, but for sure.
We were all in agreement.
Richard Talbert, who is an unbelievable speaker and professor, and he's going to do a talk about timekeeping in Rome and what they learned from the Egyptians and the Greeks and ways that they kept time during the in their culture. And then at the end, we'll have all three of our scholars at a panel, and we'll have a chance for everybody to sort of interact with each other's content and subjects, and people can ask questions of one or both or all three or what have you.
And it's fascinating because, and both of you kind of spoke to this, it's like it's a very ancient discussion of things and concepts and worldviews that existed long ago and don't today, and yet there's a timeliness to it in the way that the Egyptians thought about foreigners and the way that the Greeks thought about signs and omens and symbols and how to predict the future. These are things that we still see today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's still
the difference between the ancient and his goat and our own situation is that we don't take one goat to find out whether God is angry. We destroy the environment. And it does occur to us that through animals and their suffering, somehow, somewhere, something is getting angry, and there will be consequences.
Yeah. I think it's fair to say that the animals are not dying right?
That's right.
Yeah. Again, humanities.unc.edu for more information. You can sign up for this event. It's going to be all day Saturday, July 13th. It's called Pillars of Antiquity. Go to that homepage, humanities.unc.edu. You'll get a link right to it. Rachel Shavitz, I'll give you the last word. Other things coming up that people ought to know
this
about?
This is our last hurrah for the summer. And then we take the rest of July and August until the school year starts
Which is like less than a month and a half away,
so,
right?
Oh, so close, yeah. So not that much time. So this is our big final event for the summer, and we've already got lots of folks signed up, and so we do have a few spots left if people want to join us and hear more about the ancient Egyptians and the Greeks and the Romans. We'd love to have you there.
Humanities.unc.edu for more information. Rachel Shavitz, Fred Naden, Jennifer Gates Foster, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for having us.